Well, our top story today is a sobering update from Iran, where the situation has deteriorated into what experts are calling a war zone. Dr. Iraj Abedian, the former professor of economics for almost two decades at UCT, he was born and raised in Iran, and he's also one of South Africa's most respected analysts and entrepreneurs, having run his own business for more than 20 years. He joined me to discuss the leaked intelligence reports that reveal a shocking death toll, far bigger than anyone had been forecasting or discussing so far. The experts have been talking in the hundreds. Well, this report, as you'll hear, is many thousands. Here's Dr. Abedian.
For the first time, a news agency, international news house, got access to an internal memo from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, IRGC, reporting to the National Security Council, which is the president, the head of parliament, all the key members, giving their report that between Thursday and Friday, they have killed 12,000 of the protesters, the majority of whom, according to their reports, are young, below 30 years of age, kids involved. They have reported, which was also in the news 2 weeks ago, throwing tear gas in a hospital, two hospitals, one in Tehran, one in another city. So I think it has become a really incredibly, unbelievably horrific.
Iraj, the South African position, is this bemusing to you?
Honestly, Alec, if I want to be open about it, I can cry. I can cry for three, four reasons. One, at this point in time, after so many reports against a regime that has been by the United Nations. Remember, South Africa promotes multilateralism, adherence to the rules, compliance with the UN standards, and as opposed to unilateralism. So, you know, the United Nations has issued so many reports branding, issuing written verdict that this regime has carried out crime against humanity, time and again. And as we speak, the same. I ask myself, why should the South African government, under the constitution that we have, under the constitution that ANC fought for, and championed, why should the government violate its own constitutional mandate under which, within the framework of which, has to govern its local and international affairs? 3 weeks have gone. My last point, Alec, the South African government is quiet. It's quiet. More 12,000 people were killed by their own admission in 48 hours. We are quiet. Our minister is quiet, our president is quiet, our parliament is quiet. Why? How do we explain that? It's like yesterday I was thinking, what is happening in Iran? It's like when your immunity system within your body turns against you, you have autoimmune failures. This regime, the immunity, the government is supposed to protect the youth, the girls, the children, the authors, the everybody. It has turned against all of them, forcing them, putting military style of weapon in the streets, shooting them one by one without asking.
That's Dr. Iraj Abedian asking the hard questions about what's going on in Iran right now and expressing his deep dismay at Pretoria's silence. Well, the obvious questions for South Africans is, what is the world's most powerful country thinking of us right now? On the one hand, they have levied a 25% tariff on all countries that are doing business with Iran or the Iranian regime. And South Africa has been waving the flag on the capture of Nicolas Maduro, who many people believe was more of a narco kingpin than a president of a country. He is the Venezuelan who's now incarcerated in New York. I asked Josh Maservi, who is a senior executive at the Hudson Institute in Washington, whether South Africa is now perceived as an adversary of the United States?
I don't know if I'd go as far as adversary, just because that status, that dubious status, is reserved, I would say, for countries that physically threaten the United States in some way, right? So, excuse me. So obviously, I think you could lump, the Chinas and Russias of the world into that, certainly Iran into that category. South Africa is not any sort of military threat. It is a diplomatic nuisance. I think the view in the United States is that the ANC and South African government are sort of the handmaids of American adversaries. So they are happy and willing accomplices to American adversaries, but they themselves haven't risen to that level. Many people who follow these issues have suspected for a while that the ANC and the South African government that it still has immense influence over, and certainly within DIRCO, the foreign policy apparatus of the South African government, that it is categorically opposed to the United States, that its goals fundamentally are underlined with what the U.S. wants to achieve in the world, and that it's committed to doing whatever it can to frustrate the U.S. So I think it's yet more confirmation of that problem has really poisoned the relationship, actually for a long time. The way to understand those, though, and DIRCO released similar statements. The way to understand those, though, is that when they talk about principle or anti-imperialism or et cetera, what they're actually talking about is tribalism. Like they're talking about their group of people that they support and with whom they share politics. So in this case, the Venezuelan regime. And the ANC and the South African government will use the language of principle and morality to defend these profoundly unprincipled, vicious, brutal regimes. So we see this with Iran, for instance. I'm waiting with bated breath to see the ANC denounce the Iranian regime for killing protesters in the streets and for repressing women in horrific ways. I think I'll have to wait a very, very long time, because again, this isn't about principle as most people would recognize it. It's about partisan loyalty. So if the ANC and the South African government believe that either a regime is aligned with it in its anti-Western ideology and actions, or there's usually a lot of overlap between these groups, a regime supported the ANC's liberation struggle, then they will view anything those regimes do as good and just. So when you hear the ANC or the South African government talk about, as I say, principles or anti-imperialism, anti-colonialism, et cetera, that's code for partisan loyalty, right? And so no matter what the Cubas and the Venezuelas and the DPRKs and the Chinas and the Russias and the Irans of the world do, no matter how badly they abuse their own people, no matter how much instability they spread, the ANC and the South African government is going to support them because they're on their side.
Michelle's a mom who traded in her Fiat 500 for this beast right here. But why the momentous move, huh?
I needed something bigger to keep up with my growing son in his mini sports bags.
When you traded in your car with WeBuyCars, was it an easy conversion?
I see what you did there. The process was just so easy. I was given a tablet, had to sign, and that was it.
Basically, WeBuyCars is no mess, no fuss. Okay, it was nice chatting. We buy cars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
Well, we are giving you some insights into David Shapiro's wisdom. Here's the second segment. Dave, you described the JSE as having moved from being a stage for champions to a battleground for fighters. I love that analogy. What did you though mean by that? And maybe give us some examples.
Well, it's companies that are just fighting for survival. That's what they're doing. They're just managing the situation. We've got no electricity. Okay, we'll put up solar. we don't complain and moan and kick out government. We'll just get along with it. And that's, so you survive under the circle. No water. Okay, we'll put tanks in. And we carry on along that kind of way, just adjusting to the circumstances rather than saying, you know, starting a revolution and saying, listen, we've got to change this. We can't do this. I mean, you know, I run every day here, and each day I find a new dam in Joburg, you know, which is a big pothole or crater that has just sunk there full of rainwater. And what do? We just, I run around it. You know, I don't go and say, hold on a sec. Our roads need rebuilding. You know, we've got to do this, or we've got to create an environment that allows us to have it. You can't let the infrastructure just evaporate or just be destroyed. Alec, I started in 2007, 2008, and I remember, and this is I'd come back from Australia, and I was doing my normal runs around the country, and I started to see the institutions that make a company deteriorate. The law courts in Joburg, which were beautiful law courts, were just being neglected. The schools that, you know, the primary schools around here that were always beautifully kept, just being neglected. You started to see, you know, the street lights, robots, all of those kind of things. And when that starts to deteriorate and decay, then you haven't got the infrastructure. You need that infrastructure in order to build an economy. And I started to write articles, you know, drawing attention. And my own community, you know, and I'm talking about the northern suburbs community, they used to attack me. They used to go at me all the time, say, don't write negative articles, you know, we need clients. I say, hold on a sec. I'm doing this because it needs to be addressed, not because I want to attack government. I'm saying you've got to recognize what's needed to be done to improve the economy and create the environment or platform on which we can grow.
Tonight's wealth building tip: gold has been shining, but does gold over the long term actually outperform equity? Here's Peter Major. I've now brought up the graph of gold versus the S&P 500 index. Just explain this to us, Pete, exactly what it means.
The long-term average of gold versus the S&P is 1-to-1. That's the average. But gold got 6-to-1 back in 1979, 1980, and it fell from 6-to-1 down to 0.2 in 2002. Now it's back up to 0.6. Equities are the known outperformers of everything. It's like the Peloton and the Tour de France. Nobody can beat the Peloton more than a race because the Peloton is constantly replacing the duds and the fast guys move to the front. That's what a stock exchange index does. It's dropping the laggards, the bums, it's putting in the new companies. So we expect gold to outperform here and there, but over time, equities outperform everything.
Well, that's your briefing for today. We'll be back again tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, cheerio.